Hi, good morning. My name's Gavin. I am the CEO and founder of FE News. Welcome to VoxTech Futures. This episode is episode 6, and we're going to be looking at rural applications. Really, really interesting show today. This is totally co-produced with UEFI VoxTech Trust and FE News, and my co-anchor today is Caroline. Caroline, why don't you come into the studio? Hey, Caroline, how are you?
Hi, Gavin. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good. I'm really, really interested and excited about today's show. There's an awful lot to cover in this, but I think it's particularly interesting if we maybe start off with looking a little bit at UEFI, because we're looking at reaching remote communities. But it's quite interesting where maybe a lot of people don't realise, but UEFI is actually a 100% remote organisation. So how does that sort of help you when you're sort of looking at projects, ways of working with people? Because today is all about reaching remote and hard to reach communities at times. How does that sort of work for you as an organization when you're sort of looking at these projects? Because it must give you a bit more insight in thinking about how you're working with people, particularly on rural.
Absolutely, it does. It was very important for UEFI to kind of live by our values, and as a sort of innovative digital technology company, being set up as a fully virtual organisation is kind of key to that, to kind of, you know, prove that this can be done. We're also committed to working across all four nations. So, you know, as an organisation, we're kind of scattered around the UK, but it also gives us that virtual outreach because we're used to being in different locations, working with people in different countries at times. One of my colleagues, who Hilary, who was on the podcast last week, is in works from the Pyrenees. But it just makes sure that we are working in an environment where we understand what it's like to be distant from the people that you're working with, to be working in a fully online area. So we do meet regularly with our projects. We certainly don't let geography be a barrier in any way. And we also organise workshops online. So it's not just about the one-to-one with the projects. It's also about creating that sense of community and that networking across the individual cohorts and the wider UEFI network as well. So any opportunity to kind of bring people together on different themes or topics or specific to the cohort that we're working through is part of that as well, because with that distance thing, you can feel isolated, even if you are meeting colleagues every day online and being put in an environment with people who are facing the same challenges as you, whether that's delivering a difficult project or whether it's learning something new, you know, gives you that sense of community and support through that. So we use our model of have you thought about project mentoring, because our projects are the ones who are the experts. They know their community of learners, but from UEFI, we bring them our wider experience of supporting this type of project, and we can connect them with people who've had similar experiences. They might be using similar technology, they might be in a similar sector, or they might just have had a similar challenge. So we use that experience to kind of say, look, let's connect you with this person. They might be able to help you over this bump in the road. And that's actually been quite a very successful part of our model. And, you know, all of our projects in their final evaluation tell us how much they actually appreciate the way they work with them. You know, it can be tough at times because it's a structured approach, but it's also very, very flexible. And we help them through those difficult decisions and help them keep on track.
Sounds cool. I think what's interesting in that, because maybe the audience, people might not realise full stop, although I've got a London accent, I actually moved 15 years ago from Tower Hamlets to Torridge in North Devon. And honestly, when I lived in London and grew up in London, didn't have a clue about some of the challenges which were faced by rural communities, particularly for digital, for transport, for learning, for distance. Totally didn't get it until I moved to Torridge. And I wonder if I could bring in our two guests. We've got two really cool guests, but also really cool projects that they're doing. I'm really excited about today because I've really seen how being remote, that honestly, sometimes being remote means that the more better your view, the worse your Wi-Fi connection is what I would sort of often sort of collate together. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, but the projects that the guys are working on here, like you said, around people being remote, and being sort of feeling isolated, how do we sort of help people with that? Pandemic shone a big light into that. How do we move things forward? So I wonder if we could bring in David and Phil into the studio. So we've got Philip Leighton, who's with Boston College, David Mills, who's with Hereford, Ludlow and North Shropshire College. God, I know what you were saying earlier, David, about the Twitter handle being really long for that. welcome everyone to the studio. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Cool.
Yeah, really, really good. What do you see? Because, you know, it's interesting with different parts of the country. You know, I'm Southwest, you guys are other parts of the, you know, the country and stuff like that. What do you see as the big challenges facing rural communities and the agricultural sector right now? You jump in.
Sorry. I think from our point of view, it is the kind of accessing the training, but also us as the trainers getting to the people who need the training. So that's our first thing, is the travel. You know, we are so far away from everything. You know, the transport links are a lot not as clear as cities. You know, where, you know, in a big city there might be three or four colleges. We're one college and we can be, you know, an hour and a half away from some of our students. If we then look at the agri-tech kind of area, it's then accessing the factories at the right times when they're on the shift patterns, when it, you know, they might be on from 6 till 2, you know, 6 till 6 the next morning. So, you know, they need to sleep in the daytime, so we can't access them for giving education. So we find that as one of the bigger challenges. And also the companies don't want to release people during working days. You know, it's a big thing, particularly, you know, during the seasons.
Yeah. David, what do you find as well?
I can't but agree with all that in terms of transport issues and so on, and not to go on about that. I think there's some other issues in terms of the young people using technology, in terms of the technology available in inner cities, using Ubers, Deliveroo and so on. You know, if you ask for a Deliveroo delivery in Wem in Shropshire, then nobody quite knows what that means. It's not possible. So there's... The familiarity of the technology is different for people in rural areas, and the needs, you know, if you want to want something, you go and get it. You know, and getting delivery is not the same sort of thing. Not that it applies for 16-year-olds in terms of buying things, but it gives an example of the technology differences that they have to experience. And so priorities are slightly different. And our dealings, particularly with students within the rural businesses of agriculture, horticulture, looking after animals and what have you, is their focus is not the technology. And so technology has to be a benefit to them in a way that it's not just sort of a funny accessory. It's got to have a real benefit to them.
Yeah, no, definitely. What I think is also interesting in the agricultural sector, a friend of mine said a really interesting term. If you want to see what is the future of technology, just look in a modern tractor, and then you'll see what is going to be the future of technology. And I think that's really interesting, because you wouldn't, unless you've been rural and been in a tractor, you wouldn't think that. You just think, is this like an old, like, you know, little red tractor type of thing?
And that's the extremes. Like, also it's the digital kind of skills, then actually being able to use that kind of equipment. We cross over with that a little bit as well. But actually we find often it's the basic skills that people lack, but they can run the tractor like that. But when it comes to actually normal skills, and also their own access to technology. So they go to work, get all this technology, go home and don't have access to that, or the connectivity. So it can be a real issue with that.
I agree with that.
Also, as well, for those that may not have lived rural as well, like, we're talking about sort of access when we're sort of talking about transport, but also digital access. So broadband could be, you know, very different to what you've got in a city, but also data, mobile signal and connectivity can be very different to rural compared to a city. Just to sort of do a bit of a disclaimer for those that don't sort of know, and then can understand, well, what's the problem? I'll just pop this on my phone. Because this, David said, there's a lot of things where, you know, you can't just get an Uber, but you have got farm shops and stuff like that. You've got the benefit of that, do you know what I mean? Maybe it's a thing there, tallying up. Things happened in the pandemic with veg boxes and all sorts of meat boxes and that. But what I wanted to talk about, Phil, was your project with Boston College. That's really, really interesting, the way you're working with managers in rural communities. Well, I didn't know if you could maybe explain what that is about? Because you've said about, you've alluded to transport and getting to places, yeah. You've alluded about sort of access. I didn't know if you could unpack it a little bit more.
Yeah, so we were lucky enough to get in the discovery phase with UFI, so we could actually look into this in a little bit more. And what we was looking at is there's a real gap with training with managers, and it's the access to the training as well, and retention within the agri-tech sector. So what we looked at was how can we deliver training that will fit around the company, the learner, and us? And it was quite a difficult thing when we started to really look down to what are the solutions. So we started looking at online courses. And obviously online courses are thrown around so much now. But what we kind of started evolving is actually people don't like just the straightforward online courses. You know, you click through and you can click through quite quickly. So what we discovered in that discovery phase was actually we wanted to make it more individualized. So we started looking at how we could put a course together. So, you know, we've got the example of we've got a manager that's been in the company for years but never done the training, or we've got the new manager who's just started in the company. They both need different things. So an online course that's linear won't support both of them. It'd only probably support the one that's new to management that doesn't know as much. So we started like unpacking that. But the real thing we wanted to do is to make sure that we could be flexible. They could access it during their lunch break. They could access it at 3 a.m. when they've just got home from shift. You know, it's making it a really flexible for the learner. But also, we're not pulling out staff from the factories, because, you know, if particularly during the pandemic, you know, we got reports that people are off ill. So companies were obviously struggling to get people on board. And training was the last thing in their mind. You know, why would they release more staff? You know, the staff that are ill, the staff that need training, you know, how can we do that? So actually, our kind of project kept evolving because of the pandemic and understanding that we needed this flexibility now. It's not just about it's kind of useful for the college, it's useful for the company, but actually it's shown it's needed, because if things like the pandemic happen, we need to be able to allow our staff to keep training. So it really opened it up. But also the other thing that we were working on is that we have a lot of Eastern European workers here that obviously may struggle with the accessibility of understanding the English. So we wanted a platform that allowed them to have the kind of text-to-speech that they can convert what they're looking at. So it actually made it more accessible for the learner as well. So it just made it really evolved, and particularly over pandemic, because we was meant to have finished in April 2020 and we're still going because, you know, college got hit with the pandemic and obviously our staff needed to be trained. But I think it opened up the college's mind that we need to look at things like this, because courses need to be flexible. If they can't come in, how can we support them best? So this kind of project really helped us to open our eyes to that as well. So it's been really useful in that way.
That's really, I want to go into another couple of bits on that, because I think that sort of transcends sort of rural. It's sort of looking at place, isn't it, around like your community and how colleges are being asked to be like sort of beacons in community. And that's really interesting what you're doing there. Mm. David, you've got an incredibly interesting project as well. Really interesting. I looked into it a bit. It's fascinating. I don't know if you wanted to sort of briefly, I could say it's about horses and farrier, and people probably wouldn't understand what I'm going on about. Do you want to explain it? Because it is literally amazing.
If I start from the technology point of view, we're familiar with virtual technology in terms of you put what I've often described as that they're a bit smaller than a shoebox now, but on your head, and you immerse yourself in an environment where your computer games are really familiar with as part of that. That's virtual reality. Augmented reality is where you start to put your existing environment and you put labels on it and so on. Mixed reality is where you're in your environment where you are, and you can then put an image on there. So it's almost like a hologram, as I've often described it, as the technology that we've used. Our project came about because students started to use videos to record while they were looking at a horse or looking at an animal, and for an assessment basis, describing the various bones, features, ligaments with an animal as part of their level 2, level 3 understanding of animals. This is not medical, it's not veterinary, it's about people who take care of animals is what we've focused on. And one student quite accidentally said and got recorded, why couldn't we do this as an image, as a hologram or something? So that set some sets of balls rolling and so on, and mixed reality came up as the option. So what we ended up with in terms of our finished solution was a hologramic horse, of which you put a headset on. It's a mobile device, so you could be not just in a classroom, but you could be out in the paddock. And then you could then actually have the horse. You can scale it, size it, but you can also do things to it that you wouldn't possibly do with a live animal. Yeah. Which is really using the technology to do that. So, for example, the first level is you strip back the skin so you can see the muscles. So where they're actually pointing that this particular muscle does this, you can actually see it where it is on the animal, and you can walk around it, touch it. You can actually go through it because it's a hologram. But as part of that as well, that strips back to the skeleton and so on. The second side of this was that, well, there are things that about posture of an animal that you can't possibly induce. It's ethically just not possible to do. So, for example, a horse with a bad back or a particular high level or a bad posture, what is that bad posture? You can't induce it. We can show pictures of them, bad cases, with a mixed reality hologramic horse, in our case, is you can see that. You can see by a press of a button, all of a sudden it's got a depressed back instead of a straight back. This is what a depressed back looks like. I have to say, I'm not a horse person at all, so this was all completely new to me in terms of project managing this. So I learned an awful lot as well, and still learning as part of this as well. So that was the base of the project, to give the students the opportunity not only as a learning exercise, so that they can identify the muscles, they can identify bad posture in the animals, but we can also use it as an assessing tool. So there's two sides to it, where basically they're then presented with an image and they've got to identify it as part of that, and they get various goals and attempts and so on. So it's slightly a little bit gamified as well, to make it a bit of fun as well. So it's been quite interesting to do that. We've now, with the college, our college has two rural campuses, two live farms as well, two equine sections and so on, so that the headsets within those, they're best used in small groups. The issues, I can talk about some of the issues we've encountered later, but there are certain issues with the technology because it is so new, and we are at some early stages of that. The overriding thing that came from me, from one farrier, where we have one of the biggest farrier schools in the country, lecturing farrier said to me, he said, well, while I was apprentice, I got kicked three times by the horse. So if we can present to the students images of an animal under stress or pain, and you can recognize those features. You know, we're all familiar with the horse when his ears are back. Well, they're not quite sure, but there are more subtle features about facial features that are much harder to define. And you know, if you're a farrier and you're going to go and pick up a horse's leg and he's not feeling it, the horse isn't too hoppy, you need to be able to start to identify those. So my hope is that if we've saved one student from being kicked by a horse because they'd recognize the stress features in an animal, then the project is a success.
Yeah, 100%. And also, if we're making sure that the animal isn't under stress when we're dealing with them in the first place as well, is a huge benefit as well. That's really interesting. I wanted to talk to you around some of the challenges. I want to go into opportunities with, but you mentioned challenges there. I'm sure with headset bandwidth, rural, I can see a potential challenge.
Yes, we chose the if I'm quoting names, the Microsoft HoloLens headset, because it's a completely mobile device. The software and everything is loaded on that and so on. So there wasn't a reliance on the Wi-Fi or network connection. So they could take it out into basically its battery life. What you're carrying is a small little mobile phone with lenses on your head and so on. We were using version 1s, there are version 2s, they're now talking about version 3s in terms of a part of that. There are limited because the technology is quite heavy. It's early days in terms of do that. I mean, my hope is that in the future you can have it's a pair of glasses and you wouldn't know any different and so on. At the moment, it's a fairly heavy device and so on. It doesn't work too well with people with glasses, if you've got very vocals and so on. There's those little things that we found were problematic. And for some people, they didn't enjoy the experience. For others, it really was. There was a big wow factor. because we've represented it through videos and seeing it. When you actually experience it, you actually see this thing three-dimensional and it's almost there. And there is a certain, you know, there's a big wow factor to it as part of that, that gets them, you know, that certain students engaged in the process.
Can we sort of look to the future as well? So Phil and David, like, these are obviously like projects as they are at the minute. What can you see this extending, and how can this sort of address some of the challenges, opportunities that we've got in your rural communities?
So I think, like, from my point of view, because our project kind of went on to this personalized learning, this kind of looking at getting away from these linear online courses, but making them personalized. So, you know, they go through little mini tests and that will choose a pathway. And depending on how knowledgeable they are, that kind of chooses whether they get lots of knowledge or a little of knowledge, because we really found that if there's a tutor there with the person, they can adapt to the learner. So if they know the learner's not getting it, they'll give them more knowledge. We found that because they were online, how do we do that? So this is why we looked at the personalized learning paths. But the other bit on the other side of that is kind of coming back to what we was talking about, equipment. You know, a lot of our learners, we don't know if they've got laptops, tablets, and most of them will have a mobile. So we had to make sure that the mobile phone, it could be easily accessible. Also, it gives them the chance of having mobile internet, because we find a lot of learners, actually the broadband is not as good as where they live than it is the mobile internet. You know, they can have like 1 meg at home, but on their mobile phone it's actually got, you know, 10 megs. But that's one of our biggest issues, is the accessibility. But what we're thinking, or what we find, is a lot of businesses will have the broadband, the Wi-Fi, so actually it gives them access in a different way to be able to access the training at work. Now, sometimes that was difficult for our staff to get in, but it's easy for the workers that are already there to access that. So it the future really is the training going to be in-house, and is it going to be using the resources that were in the factories, that's in the kind of agri-tech areas, rather than coming to the college and doing it, and the time factors of it. So I think the future really is kind of, again, what David's saying, is this portable technology, this technology that is accessible and it's on the learner. They've got it access to them all the time, and not having to come into a college to access that equipment as well. And I think that's one of the biggest kind of barriers, is learners being able to want to afford it, or for us as a college to go, right, you're on a course, here's the equipment, use it while you're doing your course, and that's going to allow your accessibility. So I think that's a real big challenge. The connection to the internet is always going to be the more masks, the better. But, you know, obviously in spread areas, we'll have learners that live in the middle of nowhere, you know, and they're surrounded by fields that they don't have the internet access, you know, and that's how it is.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. David, what do you sort of see how your project, how sort of things could move forward for particularly using VocTech by some of the things around remote communities, rural, agricultural? How do you sort of see the future being?
Well, we don't see the development in the direction of where we've gone with this. We focused on a horse. We wanted to do a whole range of animals, but let's start on something that we've got some identifiable information to work with, and we stayed with one particular animal. But we'd like to diversify that across different animals, you know, cattle, sheep, so on, or agricultural animals. Could be down to wildlife in terms of it develops, so that it's not to use them as a medical tool, but so we can have a better understanding of the animals that we have to deal with in an agricultural and rural environment. So to spread, what we'd like to do is apply that to the different animals as well, then start to look about engineering spaces for them. What is an adequate amount of space? I mean, we're just focusing on purely the animal at the moment, but creating vivariums for animals where you put things in the right place to give them stimulation and so on. So there's lots of avenues we can go in this in terms of through simulation. And I think, talking what Phil talks about, is that for me, the map, you know, if I was starting now, getting into AI now and how we apply that within the educational sector, for me is absolutely fantastic. I would if I was starting out now, going back 40 years, I'd be dead keen to get involved in that, because I think that's a real future. So if we start to apply these bits of technology and use AI with them as well, I think the future is quite fantastic from that point of view.
Yeah, I think,
I think the link really works well as well, because as agri-tech gets more technological, the staff training has to be the same, because obviously they're going to be going into the workplace where they're going to be, like you say, jumping on a tractor that does it all for them. But if the training we give them is just face-to-face on paper, that's not getting them ready to understand the technology, how it works. But, you know, in my eyes, kind of going back to what David's saying, is I see that staff development would become more AI, more like kind of, you know, this mixed reality, because it gets them into the actual workplace quicker, and the training videos could be a you know, real life environment for them that they can see. And then when they actually go into it, it's already there. So it's not just for our full-time learners. I think that is really important. But I think also for what we provide for the agri-tech sector is that they need that, and they need to keep their staff and let their staff feel comfortable in the jobs they're in, but also that the staff feel like they can progress. And if we don't put that staff development and all that training in place and make it individualized to the company, to the learner, it's not going to move forward.
No.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's important. Yeah.
And if you match both your projects together, so individualized learning and also mixed reality, augmented reality, then add AI, that's really, really interesting, because a lot of people may not understand as well. If you learn talking particularly about agriculture, if someone has an accident on a farm and they're remote, it's normally quite a horrific accident. Yeah, there's a whole reason why there's air ambulances, do you know what I mean? Is because they are very horrific accidents, you know, and it's a very dangerous sort of environment to be in. If you could remove that down and let someone be able to experience that through mixed reality, virtual augmented, but also AI be able to take you through into different situations, and also personalize that, that's really, really, really exciting. I'm getting a bit overexcited. But our time is nearly gone. If you could dream and dream big, what would you want to see for the future of VocTech in to reach hard to reach communities, rural communities, agri-tech? What would you want to see, Phil, for the future?
I think, you know, from what we've experienced with VocTech, I think the big thing is having that kind of discovery phase. I think that's the most important part, is to take something we do currently and really just strip it right back and go, right, how can digital help with this? Because we are very stuck to, this is the way we've always done it, this is the way that we know it works, but actually it doesn't really work, but what can we do to adapt that? So I think it is about having the support, having some experts that come in and help us with that. We kind of find the problems, the issues, we start, you know, really stripping that back, but then getting the experts from VocTech to really help us. And I think it is then looking at this personalized learning, this wearable learning, this learning whenever it's available to them, when they need it, how they need it, at any time of the day, with any accessibility needs all met at once. That is where we kind of then start going, we're meeting everyone's needs here. And I think that's the really important bit. So I think it is that having time, you know, through the discovery phase of just really being able to let loose and not have that fear of going, well, you know, normally you can't lose money at the college, but, you know, with VocTech, they'll help us with that and say, look, have the experiments, we'll cover those costs and don't worry.
Yeah, that sounds cool. David, what do you want to
say? I'm going with Phil. I like all that. That's where I'm going. What can I add to that? Thinking about, it's got to be mobile in terms of technology, because very much the students that are, it's vocational subjects, it's practical subjects and so on. A classroom environment is something they've had for a long time from school, and they really want to get out into the real world to do things. So to be able to use the technology that will help them to learn naturally as part of a process of being out in the run, using the mobile devices, yes, attached to Wi-Fi, internet, wherever possible, where it's needed. VocTech has enabled us just to spread the learning that it's not just a classroom exercise. It is something you could do as part of what you're doing, is part of what you learn, and you learn in little bits, as we all know that, you know, the best learning is in the first few minutes of short time frames. And if we can do that in little bits, add a little wow factor to it as well, that's the future where I want to see things going.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Our time is gone. Thank you so much. Go on, Carol.
One very quick reflection, because these guys have been amazing. It's just lovely to hear from this side of supporting them. But what I've really enjoyed hearing and seeing with these projects is that they've really truly understood what the learners needed, and that's coming through strong, you know, a couple of years in on these projects, that they've actually, they're still working to understand and make sure that the learner's at the heart of it. It doesn't become about the technology, it's about what the learner needs and what they can benefit from. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think this, we're looking at rural today, but if you take this out and look at, you know, this full stop everywhere, you know, this is really interesting, taking it on to your community, bringing learning, instead of being chalk and talk, it's bringing the learner into, you know, being responsive to the learner, also using mixed technology to be able to help their environment, to be able to help them be safe. I just think there's some really, really interesting, you know, elements that we've got in here. But our time's totally gone, everyone. And I think we could talk about this for absolutely ever. I want to just highlight to everyone, next week, 15th to the 19th, is Week of Voctech. Really, really interesting, really exciting projects. I mean, these are two incredibly exciting projects where you just take it out of, into rural, what an impact, but take it out of rural, even like this mind-blowing what we could be doing. I just want to say thank you to all the audience for joining us today. I hope you've been as inspired and excited as me. Everyone, thank you for joining today. I really appreciate it. This is a total co-produced, so from UFI, massive thank you to Thomas, Caroline, Hillary, thank you. Effie Newside, Leah, thank you so much for making the magic happen. Kelly, Finley, this is really, really exciting stuff. Don't forget, Week of Voctech next week. We'll see you in about 2 weeks for Voctech Futures episode 7. It's just flying by. See you all soon, everyone.
Thank you. Bye. 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 Bye.